Good evening. Welcome to the Solaria Report. Today is Thursday, May 18th, 2017. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Well, we had a great lunch in Louisville. About 35 folks gathered from many different areas. People came up from Tennessee, over from Oklahoma, as far away as Wisconsin, Texas, a couple people from Amarillo. Anyway, it was a great group. Farrell gave a great speech, and we're going to put it up on the crowdfund website. We also had a wonderful donor offer a match for Phase 3, so we will announce that as soon as we have it up on the website. And I really think we're, with Phase 1 and 2 funded and the organ ordered to be delivered in June, it looks like we're going to complete by Labor Day. So I'm really excited, and if you're interested in getting that match for Phase 3, we'll be sending that out to the network in our weekly update as soon as we have it ready. I'm leaving on Saturday for Australia. I'm going to be in Sydney for 4 weeks, and I've been talking with folks about possibly a lunch in the Sydney area, and I'll keep you posted as we as that develops, if you're interested in coming to lunch in Sydney. Then for the week of June 19th, I'm headed to Hong Kong, and then the following week I'll be in Bangladesh. Then I'm flying back through San Francisco. I'll be in San Francisco for a week. July 8th, we're going to have lunch at Perry's in Larkspur. We'll announce that. That'll be up shortly, and it'll come out in the update next week. So if you're interested in having lunch in the San Francisco Bay Area, I really hope you can come out to that. We've had a lot of requests to have a lunch in the San Francisco area. Then we had such a strong appetite for the trip to Australia, we decided we'd do a new week. So if you go back to our website, there's a new week you can link to Enlighten Events, who's the sponsor. And we already have had sign-ups, and it's an outstanding group the first week, and it's an outstanding group that signed up the second week. So if you've never been to Uluru and the Australian Outback, it was a really life-changing trip. And we'll have Jason Bond-Smith and Richard Dolan for both weeks. So anyway, trip of a lifetime, incredible people. Come if you can. We had a new subscriber ask for where the information was on the breakaway civilization. So in the comments, I put up a very detailed list. And it was much longer than I ever realized. We've done a lot on it. So if you're interested for a complete selection of links on the breakaway civilization, there it is. We still have prayer books. Just send an email, call, or send a self-addressed stamped envelope, and we'll send you one back. They're free. Our theme tonight, I'm going to use a poem from Rumi that I really love, and it goes like this. Sit, be still, and listen, because you're drunk and we're at the edge of the roof. If you watch what's been going on in the United States over the last month, it's pretty unpleasant to watch, and there are several things happening at once, so let me just unpack some of them. First of all, we're having a governance debate about who runs our executive branch. Is it the president and the cabinet, or is it the deep state? Kucinich did an interview this week that's really terrific. It's up on the under top picks. And he did a fabulous job. Kucinich, having been a congressman from Ohio and really very knowledgeable about the U.S. government, he said this is not about the president. It's about whether we're a democracy or we're going to let the deep state control. Let me read you some of the quotes from the interview. It was on Fox News with Sean Hannity. Kucinich said that the deep state within the bureaucracy is trying to destroy Donald Trump's presidency. He said there is a politicization of intentionally nonpartisan agencies that has resulted in leaks to the press and a threat to the republic. Kucinich called the damaging leaks against Trump a clear and present danger to the American way of life. He called on the anonymous leakers to have the courage to name themselves. Our first allegiance is to our country, he added. Our country itself is under attack from within. Mike Huckabee credited Kucinich with ignoring the majority of his fellow Democrats and speaking out on the crisis in a nonpartisan way. Kucinich is right. The question is whether the deep state's going to tell the president what to do or the president's going to be the president. Second, there is a never-ending financial coup. It continues. And much of what is happening is a distraction so that we don't engage in the conversation. How come there's not enough money for healthcare? How come there's not enough money for tax reform? How come there's not enough money for infrastructure and all the things we need to do? Nobody wants to talk about that because then they'd have to say, well, where's the $6.5 trillion that went missing in 2015 from the Department of Defense? I put up a commentary this week on James Comey called All You Need to Know About James Comey. Forget what Comey said or did not say or do about Hillary Clinton or Trump or any related sort of scandals or investigations thereof. Comey completely ignored the fact that $6.5 trillion went missing in 2015 from the Department of Defense. Now, Comey is the former general counsel of Lockheed Martin that ran the systems and payment systems, we believe, it, or significant ones at the Department of Defense. And the fact that he did absolutely nothing, that works out to about $20,000 plus per American. So that's a great deal of money. And that sort of tells you everything you know you need to know. It's now very clear, however, though, that the Washington establishment and corporate media really don't want to make America great again. They really couldn't care less. Quite the contrary, they make money from liquidating America. They make money on debt, crime, and war. And they intend to liquidate America to make their empire and themselves great. And they really just don't care. Part of the problem is, and you can see this when you compare our society to Japan and China, we basically have lawyers and weapon makers and entertainers, and they have engineers. So our brand relative to China is declining daily, and it's very hard for someone like me to watch because I'm watching an entire society fail because they have a lot more people who make money and succeed by making rules for others as opposed to building things. Okay, so there's a third thing that's going on, and that is the fake news is getting even worse. Hard to believe, but all week long I've been reading what are continuous flat-out lies in some of the largest newspapers. So James Comey, former head of the FBI, says A, Trump says it's not true, the truth is B, and then Comey's statement is treated as though it's the truth, even though the rules are, unless you can get corroboration, you have to say it's an allegation and present both sides, but they're not bothering to do that. Even more baffling is the Washington Post got an anonymous source that Trump said X. Now, it's anonymous. It's not even somebody's willing to go on the record. Meantime, Trump, McMaster, Tillerson all said Trump didn't say that. Trump didn't say X. So you have the Secretary of State, the National Security Advisor, and the president saying, the president didn't say that. But the Wall Street Journal puts a headline saying, Trump did it as if it was a fact. It's not a fact at all. Now, if you look at what happened, the leak itself was what compromised national security. And it's very much projective identification. They're doing what they accused Trump of doing. But he's not doing it. They're doing it. And the conclusion you realize when you see it is they couldn't care less about national security. It's a show. It's an entertainment. It has nothing to do with reality. And they really don't care about reality. And the effort to continue to try to reduce and marginalize independent media is really very strong. It's, they're reverse engineering the mistakes they feel they made last year by allowing any kind of independent media. It's a serious effort for what I call mind-controlled nation in the wrap-up scenarios for the annual wrap-up. Then Roger Ailes died this week. He'd been forced out of Fox with his sexual harassment charges. I believe his death is very suspicious. My guess is there's an 80% chance his death might have been impacted or facilitated covertly. So they made it easy for him to fall. Believe it or not, the tools and techniques exist to do that. He fell in his home a week ago and died from the repercussions of that, but there are many, many ways they can facilitate that. I just think Roger Ailes knew too much, and he certainly knew about what's going on and what they're up to in terms of cleansing the media. This is all very odd for me because I was furious. When Donald Trump first started to run as a primary candidate, I was furious that anyone would take him seriously. If you're from New York, the thought of Trump becoming president is very heinous to you because he's, you know, my attitude is he's quite the bully. However, the reality is, if you look at how things played out, clearly I voted for him and supported him against Clinton, convinced that the system was so corrupt that anything was better than same old, same old. So, but for whatever reason, Trump became the president, and he is the president. And after scores of situation, I found that Trump and his team are much more reliable than any of the national newspapers and TV networks, to my shock and amazement. Although some of his team is quite capable, so in that sense, it doesn't surprise me. So at this point, I get my news from the White House or the agencies or the actual language in executive orders or draft legislation or press statements. So whether it's the written language formally put out or the executive branch political appointees, I find them infinitely more reliable than the corporate news. Now, it's interesting. Apparently, Obama has been quoted as saying that Trump is a bullshitter. And this is a perfect example of the sort of cultural clash we're watching. Trump's a promoter. He's a showman. He's a salesman. And he's trying to promote a vision of America's great again. And I don't find that to be bullshitting. I do think he's a bullshitter. But if you look at Obama, Obama ran around the world promising hope and then gifted a generation's retirement savings to the banks and proceeded to justify it, which has to be the greatest package of bullshitting in the history of Western civilization, pardon my use of swear words. And it's as though Obama can't make the connection, you know, so this all seems to be about process and style. If your process and style is well-mannered and gracious, then it's okay to give away a generation's retirement savings to the banks, and that's not bullshitting. But, you know, sort of being a promoter and weaseling around like Trump can do, that's bullshitting, which tells me, you know, this establishment is so corrupt that it can't even look in the mirror, it can't even see itself. Okay, so issue number one was the governance debate. Issue number two is we've got a distraction away from the never-ending coup. Issue number three is the fake news is getting noticeably worse. The next issue is please don't get gaslighted. I'm amazed at how many people are falling prey to the shriekometer. First of all, the chances of impeachment currently are very small. Not to say that there aren't some parties trying to increase the chances by persuading you that it's possible, but right now it's highly unlikely. The second thing is if you get mad at the president for having to tolerate the shrinking, you know, then you're the problem, not the president. The test of whether or not somebody's cleaning out corruption is the level of the shrinking. If they're shrinking, it means their cash flows are being cut off and they're being threatened. Of course they're shrinking. So if you have no tolerance for the shrinking, then apparently you don't want to clean up the swamp. But don't think that, you know, that this is somehow Trump's fault and you know, it shows he's doing a bad job. If you want a clean and easy cleaning of the swamp, there ain't no such thing. Now, the shriekometer and the power lines are two very different things. So you can hear shrinking all day long, but it doesn't necessarily mean anything to the power lines. You've got to connect the dots. If you want news on the White House, you know, best the shriek, just ignore the shriekometer and read the news at the White House or the agencies. If you want corporate coverage of the White House, probably the best thing and the least shrieky is Reuters. When it comes to D.C. political coverage at this point, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, and the TV networks are, with rare exception, completely useless. Anyway, just keep asking how the money works. I did a book review of the of a book called Shattered on the Clinton Campaign. And I recommend that review to you. It's a perfect example of how many people in the Shriekometer have no idea how the money works. And you don't want to fall into that category. So keep asking yourself how the money works. Okay, next issue, Navigating the Madness. I think when I talk with people, when I'm at lunches, when I talk with subscribers, I hear that you're more and more concerned that you're basically staying sane, but so many of the people around you are not, and they don't seem to see what's going on, whereas you do. Here's the tragic situation we're in. We have a world where there's tremendous effort with propaganda and sort of very powerful technology to talk people into an official reality that's further and further divorced from reality. And it's, you're getting sort of a madness going. Some of it is induced. Some is just the blowback from the so much effort to induce madness and to rig markets that literally the establishment has also forgotten what's real. So each one of us has two choices. We can go mad with the crowd, or we can remain sane and coherent. But that means we're going to have to learn to navigate a society where many people are mind-controlled and we're not, or we're less susceptible. So each one of us needs to learn to ignore the madness and create what you can with the people around you who also do not go mad. There are plenty of them, but you have to find them. One of the really nice things about my life is I travel around the world and go from lunch to lunch, meeting lots and lots of them. So if all of the Solarius subscribers were ever to get together in one place, there'd be a lot of energy. Anyway, focus on the people who are not going mad and invest in them, and stop trying to persuade the others who've gone mad to sort of come back to sanity. If they see you and the other people who haven't gone mad, having fun and making progress, they'll come back around. That's your best shot. Okay, finally, trench warfare. Don't ever think that what's happening is hopeless, because this really is trench warfare. And it is exceptionally important that you keep supporting the good guys in the play. There are many good members of Congress. There are many good people in state and local government. You need to keep dialoguing with them. You need to keep supporting them. Just pick out one or two and just support them. Think small, and think as small as you want to think. But you need to get something done that's positive, and you need to keep doing the positive thing. Whenever I hear cynicism and sarcasm, to me, it's a symptom of powerlessness, and that's not a state of mind or state of being that you want to embrace. So gather your power, even if it means you only sit and be still as the crowd goes mad. If you want to do something really good this week, up in Top Picks, there's a link to an article called "Where All Tenant Farmers, Oregon Plans to Douse Azure Standard Organic Farm and Pesticide." And it's about something you can take 5 minutes to do. You can email their county and see if you can't support Azure Farm. It's a really good thing to do. I sent my email right away. Anyway, the good news on all of this is it's the summer. It's time to go to the mountains or the beach and read a good book. So it will be a long hot summer, but feel free to ignore all the Shriekometer. Money in markets, U.S. dollar index down almost 5% so far for the year. It's broken the $100 line. And I think the clear message to the world watching Washington is it's not leadership that's inspiring. Washington certainly doesn't appear like it's under adult supervision. And I have to say, I don't think that's the president's fault. So you have a group of people who really are not interested in making America great. They're interested in making themselves or their pocketbooks great. The corruption, the depth of the corruption is extraordinary. Fixed income is doing a little bit better as a result. The long treasury is up now 4.5%, the intermediate up to 3/4, the bond aggregate up 2.2, and junk bonds still cooking along at almost 3.70. Equities have backed off a little bit. The S&P now up 6.4% for the year. Home builders at up 10.5%. Given the behavior going on in Washington, the Democrats backed off today in a big way. It wouldn't surprise me if what happened in the stock market scared them. Truly, if this tanks the stock market, Washington witch hunting and warring is going to be blamed, particularly because if you're busy witch hunting, you don't have time to do health care or tax reform. And so tax reform is certainly looking more remote this year, and the Senate is getting nowhere. The nowhere on health care, and anyway, we are coming into summer, so we are overdue for a correction. Be prepared for a 10 to 20% correction before October. I see no sign of anything that would say that we're not still in a bull market, although the financial system could always hit a bump, but a 10 to 20% correction would be perfectly normal. And of course, Wall Street could make a lot of money on a correction like that. So that absolutely increases the chances it could happen. Clearly, the international and emerging markets doing better. Europe up 16.2%. Germany up 15.7%. The developed markets minus North America up 13%. That's more than double the S&P for the year. China up 12.47, that's large caps, small caps up almost 10%, and the emerging market ETF up 15.08%. The commodity index now down 5.2, gold up 8.39, silver up 4%, and oil still dragging its heels down 16.5%. Ooh, that's painful. And it's amazing that junk can continue to do as well as it is with oil that far down. More U.S. strikes on Syria from NBC News today. United States launched an airstrike against pro-Syrian forces, which had advanced into, quote, deconflicted zone, even though Russia urged the U.S. not to do it. And according to NBC News, the airstrike appears to be the first publicly known direct confrontation between U.S. forces and fighters loyal to Syrian President Assad. So, big question mark. The effort over the last week or two to promote war in Syria has been a redoubling of efforts. Interestingly enough, right before last week's meeting in Washington, both at State Department and the White House with Foreign Minister Lavrov from Russia, Paul Craig Roberts on April or published the following. On April 26, 16 days ago, the deputy chief of the main operations directorate of the Russian Armed Forces stated at the Moscow International Security Conference that the operations command of the Russian General Staff has concluded that Washington is preparing a nuclear first strike on Russia. Imagine that. A nuclear first strike on Russia. That's not a good sign. Craig Roberts' article was called, Are You Prepared to Die? In the meantime, numerous Washington News published an article accusing Syria of a quote-unquote probable crematorium as one of its prisons. Syria flatly denied it. If I have to guess, I'm going to side with Syria. It just... You know, it continues to look like an unending drip, drip, drip of neocon fake news, all trying to start a major war and put us back on the 7 countries and 5-year plan, which I've talked about consistently over the last couple weeks. Anyway, this all followed an Arab state's overture to Israel before the president's trip to Middle East, a peace overture. So, now the president is headed both to Europe and the Middle East, including the G7 meeting in Sicily. So let's see what this brings. But we expect to see, and we've heard in the headlines, big arms sales into Saudi Arabia. But you definitely get the feeling that the the military-industrial complex is extremely eager for more and very expensive wars. And it's another reason why the shriekometer is shrieking so loud in Washington. Because, in fact, if there's no money for health care and there's no money for tax reform, how come we can afford to have so many wars? Important question. Venezuela is experiencing a serious collapse. I would describe it as more of a hit than a collapse. I've looked for different ways to donate and haven't been able to find one, which is interesting. It's almost as though the United States has made it almost impossible to help. If anybody knows a good way to donate and to help people in Venezuela, let me know. The Puerto Rico bankruptcy proceeding has started with its first day in federal court this week. Puerto Rico has $74 billion of bond debt, and then if you add to that unfunded pensions, you've got $123 billion. And you have many different kinds of bonds, and there's real disagreement. It's not legally clear what the, you know, who has what priority. I'm going to keep trying to watch this bankruptcy because it's going to be very relevant if we see what happens here. It's not a binding precedent on municipal reorganizations or bankruptcies in the United States, but I think it will be an influential one. So I'm very curious to see what happens and how the different bondholders behave. Because if you look at the bondholders on any municipality in this country, it's going to be a very similar cast of characters. So it's worth watching closely. Weather reports. I continue to see reports about weather impacting crops. So I want you to keep an eye on that, and I want you to keep an eye on food prices and continue to pay attention to where your food comes. Anything you can do to establish relationships and find sources of good local foods, good local food with farmers, local farmers, I just think it's food security could be an issue, particularly food quality. So you really want to care where your food comes from, and you really want to do everything you can to build resiliency into your food supply. Global hack. We've seen ransomware for the last 2 weeks, really said to be from the tools hacked from the NSA that exploit legacy Microsoft software. But it's been a very uncomfortable process, reminding all of us that we keep getting more and more dependent on a system that doesn't have integrity. And it's interesting. Russia and China have come out and publicly blamed the United States, basically saying, if you're going to make this stuff, you shouldn't let it out, which is, of course, absolutely true. George Friedman, the former head of Stratfor, who now has a new firm, Geopolitical Futures, wrote the following, and I wanted to read it. I thought it was a very astute comment. The computer industry is now in a position of the auto industry in the 1960s, reluctant to provide seatbelts, airbags, or other safety features. Car makers encountered government regulation. Then, with the principle of regulation established, the government went far beyond safety. In my view, the computer industry is naive and not thinking about the long-term consequences of its reluctance to evolve in security. The problem of anonymity. Anonymity is one of the roots of the problem. Vandals and criminals are rarely caught because the principle of anonymity is built into the internet. This problem has been compounded by the introduction of bitcoins, a form of financial transaction that attempts to maintain the anonymity of its users. The problem with anonymity is that while fostering freedom, it inevitably enables criminals to use that freedom for their ends. The attacker's demand for bitcoins in the latest event makes this point clear. This paradox, where the right to act without government scrutiny aligns with the rise of ruthless criminality, isn't new. As an empirical matter, however, a banking system that does not take responsibility for exposing criminals will find the state taking that role. This is very much a geopolitical problem. It is not only, as many argue, that the current system enables cyber warfare between states, but also that it facilitates organized crime on a global level. This problem is aided by an industry that builds products that make cyber warfare and criminality relatively easy, an internet that makes identifying criminals and state actors relatively difficult, and now a banking system that is designed to make the finances of the Borgias and Medicis appear the essence of ethics. As a practical matter, what this situation will lead to either is the ever deeper corruption of the state and insecurity of personal wealth, or the state imposing itself on the global computing system in as heavy-handed a way as possible. The idea that we're helpless in the face of cyber warfare, constant vandalism, and now criminal extortion, if true, will lead to the collapse of computing. Computing has become indispensable, but it is its very indispensability facing constant threat that will cause its collapse. You cannot be both indispensable and incredibly vulnerable. As for me, the virtue of legal pads for important matters is becoming manifest. So, as I've said before, how can we have the Internet of Things if the Internet has no integrity? Now, what does this mean to you? If you can use Linux, if you can use open source software, please do. It's not surprising that this was a Microsoft problem. So anything you can do to get into Linux and open source, I would recommend it. Retail competition. We've seen online sales growing for years, but now they're going up an S-curve. It's hitting physical retail hard. It's also hitting municipal budgets, where municipal budgets depend on that sales tax. So we're also seeing with this real competition on groceries, including online sales. So expect that retail competition to begin to have a much more dramatic impact around you. U.S. policies, there's a lot going on, so let me just run through them. The White House says they're going to renegotiate NAFTA. Who knows what that means? Tax reform is clearly delayed. Congress is too busy witch hunting to have time to do serious healthcare, tax reform, infrastructure. All these things require a lot of time and effort, a lot of work. And if you're gonna spend all day running around in circles over the shriek-o-meter, you're gonna have a problem. Mueller has been appointed as the special counsel on the Russian investigation by the Department of Justice. Why? Is this good or bad? Question mark. Any special counsel is bad. It's bad because it's more time and money on something that will add no value. There's no there on the whole Russian investigation, but it could go in many places and it could take a great deal of time. Mueller used to run the FBI, started 1 week before 9/11, and he left 12 years later after all aspects of that operation had been affected. And to this day, people still believe that 20 guys, most of whom are still alive in Saudi Arabia, did 9/11. So, was Mueller somebody you want to trust? Mueller is the deep state. So, and certainly I never heard of him investigating the $3.3 trillion that was missing and announced to be missing right before 9/11 happened. Or I don't hear of him investigating the money that went missing in the Middle East wars during his term. So, but Mueller now controls most or all of the files grabbed from Comey's office. One of the problems with the surprise firing is Comey's out of town and DOJ rushes in and grabs all his files. And of course, all of Washington freaks out because they know inside those files is a treasure chest of information on the Washington establishment. So of course, the big issue is who's going to get to control those files. And now they put the lid on them. I think it was a terrible mistake for Sessions to recuse himself from the Russian investigation, and ultimately it's going to cost the taxpayers a lot of money. But it is what it is. It's been done now, and you can see why, given the shriek-o-meter turning this into a huge production, the guys at the Department of Justice, Sessions and his deputies, would want to have somebody to handle it, especially. Otherwise it's going to bury the line. It's the same issue I talk about with having war games. You don't want to get your line management buried. Now, subsequent to the special counsel appointment, once Comey's files were tucked away under Mueller's control, the Democratic leaders had a press conference to try and cool talk with impeachment. The translation means they figure they have a lid to keep enormous amounts of their dirt under wraps for the next 4 years, is my interpretation. It's all life and swamp management. Now, what's the most important thing going on in Washington? None of this. What's important is the budget. The White House has said that the new budget will be published, and this is the first published budget of this administration. It will be published next Tuesday, May 23rd. So if you want to understand what reality in Washington is, that budget will tell us a lot. The process will begin with the committees, the subcommittees in the Appropriation Committee going through what they're going to do. And they'll be, as the committees negotiate, they will recess. Big decisions, in my experience, are made out in discussion at the Bohemian Grove and other discussions between leadership behind the scenes. And then the Congress will return after Labor Day, and the houses will be reconciled, and we should have a new budget by October 1st. So between May 23rd and October 1st, this will go through the sausage factory of democracy, and that's where we'll see the real discussions. This process is very real. It's going to impact what money goes to health care, what money goes to tax reform, and how those dovetail with it. This is where the real money gets cut up. So if you want to know more about the budget, sit down and read the budgets. It's enormously interesting and instructive. Or take a look at the article I wrote in 2013 called Coming Clean Beyond the Fiscal Cliff that will describe some of the issues that make it difficult to come to grips with real change in the budget. But this is where the real change is going to happen. And I can assure you, before people started to whack up the budget, they wanted to make sure that those Comey files were tucked away under wraps. Washington is scared. Now, one of the things we see happening is the place-based opportunity taken advantage of. The place-based opportunity is what happens when you get in and re-engineer the money in every one of 3,100 counties. We see Steve Ballmer, former CEO of Microsoft, putting up a website, USA Facts. I recommend it. It's very interesting. There's a lot to learn. And I really commend Ballmer for doing this. I think it's a great idea. Treasury has come out with one like his. It's clearly not as good, but I went and played with it, as did another member of the Solari team. And basically, when we clicked on our place, one guy from Arizona got nothing, and myself in Tennessee, I got very little. So I think it's just in beta, and I would encourage the Treasury to keep on going and keep working on it until it really gets rich. But right now, I would say it's not particularly useful. And then, clearly, there are plenty of investors who understand the place-based opportunity. Buffett continues at his meetings to eat his popsicle and calls the healthcare system a tapeworm. So, there's nothing like imitation is the highest form of compliment. Facebook and Google are teaming up with local media, and, so they're diving in. And this is all part of the retreat back into America. Global margins are falling for the big companies, and the question is, how do we go deep in America? Here's the reality. When you lower the energy price, which we're doing, but we can do it a lot more, whether renewables get more efficient or we really institute breakthrough energy. When you bring the energy price down, you make a fortune on the cash flows within a place, or you can, and the real estate. But these guys want very strong mind control in place, and they want to bring the life expectancies down before that energy, drop significantly. That way they can get the equity upside on their centralized and corporate interests. So that's what this is about, making sure that the pro-centralization team grabs all of that equity upside as they bring the energy price down. It's an ugly picture, but that's the reality. But as you see more and more people, we have JP Morgan highlighting all the great local things they're doing in Detroit. It's kind of, you just think, Their ad team must have not a clue, what they... It's like they get a memory wipe every night. Anyway, but you can see them all kind of swarming in for the place-based opportunity, and that's why I say I think it's going to happen, and it means there's going to be more opportunities locally for a variety of people. Finally, I did write a book review of this new book on Hillary Clinton's campaign called Shattered: Inside Hillary Clinton's Doomed Campaign. I do recommend my book review. I don't recommend the book. I think if you read my book review, and I also link to Matt Taibbi's review of the book as well. If you read my review, if you want more, read Matt's review. I think you'll basically get the 411. You don't need to read the book. Our hero this week is Seth Rich and Rich Wheeler. Seth Rich was a DNC staffer who was shot in the back in the District of Columbia in the early hours of the morning last summer. The question, of course, was why. Shortly after he was shot, WikiLeaks posted a $20,000 reward. WikiLeaks never discloses their sources, but there's a variety of reasons to believe that Seth Rich was the source of the DNC leaks about the extent to which the DNC sort of rigged the campaign for Hillary Clinton over Bernie Sanders. Rich Wheeler is a private investigator who worked for the Seth Rich's family. The family announcement has indicated that he had been sworn to confidentiality, and so if he did say what the press is quoting him as saying, it's in violation of his agreement with them, but he's indicating that there were signs on Rich's laptop that he was emailing with WikiLeaks. There's another report in the press saying that there were as many as, I think, 40,000 or 400,000, a very significant number of emails or communication between Rich and WikiLeaks. I always assumed when he was shot in the back that it was basically the Clintons. If you look at the Clinton history, there's a long history of people in and around the Clintons being assassinated. Victor Thorne did a great book on Clinton corruption. He did a series of three. The third one is on all the assassinations. And in August 2016, Victor Thorne died mysteriously, not surprisingly. If you look at the leaks about Rich and the timing versus the leaks at the Washington Post about Trump presumably giving away confidential information in a way that compromised intelligence from Israel, it almost looks like that was a leak dumped out on one group, and that group leaked the Seth Rich back, which doesn't surprise me, because if you're going to whack Trump and his team, then it's likely to be primarily sort of the neocon side of, or the Democratic side of the neocons. And of course, where are they most vulnerable? They're most vulnerable in the fact that the Russians didn't give WikiLeaks those emails. Seth Rich did, and Seth Rich was assassinated as a result. So if you think it's bad that the Democratic Party is rigging the campaign for Hillary Clinton, imagine how bad it's going to look when the Democratic Party is having their own staff assassinated. Anyway, the allegation is that Rich was in contact with WikiLeaks, and I believe that's one of the reasons WikiLeaks announced the $20,000 reward. And if you think it was really funny when Assange did that, the Washington establishment went nuts because, as you know, the key to power for the pro-centralization team is the ability to kill with impunity. And when you take away that capacity, you basically pull the rug out from under them. It was really funny. Somebody asked Kim.com, you know, who was Seth Rich? What did he think Seth Rich, or who or what was he? And Kim.com answered, Seth was WikiLeaks' DNC source. Seth was killed for that reason. Seth is one of many Clinton victims. Seth is a hero for preventing Clinton. What .com says is what I believe. And so Seth Rich is our hero tonight. His brother, Seth Rich's brother, is doing a GoFundMe campaign to raise money to help solve the murder of Seth Rich. I'm a donor to that crowdfund, and I've put a link up on Top Picks. So if you're interested, go make a donation, and let's just hope that truth may come out yet. If you look at the speed at which the Midianite thing is happening back and forth with links, you know, I'm sorry, with leaks, this could come out at any moment. So if you look at the number of cameras in the area in which he was shot in the back, and if you look at the extent to which information circulates around Washington, more than a few people have this information, and it wouldn't surprise me if it got leaked out at some point. Because the if you look at who's leaking now, they have no intention of allowing the Russians to take the heat when in fact it was the DNC who was leaking on themselves. Anyway, let's go to the movies. Our movie this week is Unacknowledged. It's a new documentary from Steve Greer's group, or the filmmaker associated with them. And it's a documentary about the black budget, black technology, and the black world. And our interview tonight is on Edward Bernays and sort of the propaganda of big lies. And it's a perfect example because it talks about the extent of the lies around the black budget. And it's got a lot of great interviews. Greer, over his career, has collected up a lot of great military whistleblowers and got them on film. He's got a lot of great interviews of these guys. And when you see them all together, it's very impactful. And I think he does a good job of making the basic outlines of the black budget accessible, and he also warns about the danger of faking an alien invasion and some of the other ways this information can be used as disinformation. So it's certainly very interesting and worth your while. Our interview today is with Junius Ricardo Stanton, who's the producer and host of The Digital Underground and the Cyberspace Sanctuary, A Safe House for Your Mind. Junius hails from Philadelphia and the University of Pennsylvania, just as I do, and I have just a tremendous respect for his knowledge and ability. He's a remarkable person, and I love talking with him, and it's one of the reasons I try and get him on this report so I can hear what Junius has to say. And it was very interesting because many Solari Report subscribers have said, please do a Solari Report on Edward Bernays. And then a couple weeks ago, I realized, wow, Junius is blogging about Bernays and his techniques. And so I said, perfect, let's get Junius. What we focus on is Bernays' idea of the big lie and how to construct an official reality with a lie that's so big that literally you can create a false reality. And if you understand the history of Bernays and the lies he built and the techniques he developed, and then see how it follows through the 20th century into the time now, you start to realize how much effort and resources have gone into the technology of creating false realities and sort of the Orwellian nature of the official reality versus reality today starts to make sense. Okay, Ask Catherine. A lot of questions today. Hi, Catherine. Thank you for your courage and vision. On May 9th, at more than one time in various news stations, coverage of Trump's meeting with the Russians, there was also a briefly featured picture of Kissinger and Trump, though I'm not sure they were in the same room, but the optics were the same at the same time. There was no coverage of what or why they were going on with Kissinger and Trump, only the coverage of the Russian meeting at the White House. What do you make of it? Also, on a couple of recent commentaries, you mentioned people in the administration not being inhuman. Is there some place or report on the website where you talk about how to recognize inhuman, unhuman, transhuman, alien? Thank you. Kissinger is one of, you know, in those horror movies where you hold up the cross to basically back off the vampire, Kissinger was being used by Trump in that way. Basically, Trump was having the Russians in. He was meeting with the Russians, and he was using Trump. I mean, he was using Kissinger as a former Secretary of State and someone respected by the establishment to basically say, look, I have a faction of the establishment advising me and backing me on this, and you know, and you better stand down, because if you criticize this, you're basically not just taking on me, but taking on the establishment. So he's basically using Kissinger to shut the shriekometer up, if you will. He's also been using Rice that way. Not to say that they aren't advising him and giving him sort of advice from one section of the more Rockefeller faction of the Republican Party. So it's air cover in dealing with the deep state. When I said that people were inhuman, I didn't mean they were not human. But I think there's a real issue of whether we're going to have a human culture or an inhuman culture. And the neocons are consistently promoting something which I believe is inhuman. But I don't mean that in a, in the sense that they're not as a species human beings. I think they are. I just think they have their empathy gene turned off. Question, what was the motive for creation of the 9/11 disruption event? Answer, to allow quick passage of the Homeland Security Act. Question, what was the motive for passing the Homeland Security Act? Answer, to remove the individual's right to habeas corpus, individual's right to a speedy trial by jury, and there it is hidden in plain sight. To all who are paying attention for in politics, little is left to chance, and there is a lie in every level in the government. I would say the passage of the Homeland Security Act was one of many, many agendas. The 9/11 event was highly stacked. There were hundreds of actions related to financial fraud, enforcement, legislation, moving the black budget on budget. Between the Homeland Security and Patriot Act, I would say that the control and concentration of cash flow and credit was, you know, a significant part of the agenda. Hi, Catherine. I too am leery about Bitcoin. I came across the following interesting article by Charles Savoy, author of Silver Stealers. I thought I would share it with you and your members. Good. Thank you. Yes, Bitcoin is an insecure infrastructure, and it's highly speculative. I've read in part the book by Charles Savoy called The Silver Stealers. I will not suggest you read this lengthy book, as I know you have a stockpile of books to read, although it is incredible information, and the following link is well worth listening to and passing on to your members. Okay, I'll check it out. Hi, Catherine. I'm working on a report which will detail opportunities to unwind the legacy FFELP ABS and FFELP in general. I've spent most of my journalism career to date focused on non-agency RMBS, ABS, CDOs, and derivatives. Then I started reaching student loans, and I couldn't agree more with the following statement you made in your September 2011 piece regarding William Diefendurfer. Quote, I thought I'd seen the worst that financial fraud could do to America. I was wrong. What has happened in the student loan industry over the last 15 years is worse than anything I've seen before. And then they go on with a very long detailed thing, which we'll have in the notes, but I won't repeat here. I've been researching the sector for quite a while now, and I just came across your work a few weeks ago. The vested interests run extremely deep. I've never seen anything like it. I hope you can speak with me on this topic off the record. It's completely fine. I will reach out to you as soon as things calm down a little bit. So I thank you for the note. Dear Ms. Fitz, a big thank you for speaking at the lunch in Pasadena on Saturday, May 6th. As a brand new subscriber, I was thrilled to attend, meet fellow subscribers, and hear your thoughts on our questions. I'm in awe that after all you've been through, you're so active in public. So many people are afraid to talk about money or pursue their passion, especially after a traumatic incident. Thank you for boldly sharing insightful information. I subscribe not only to gain clarity and a sense of community, but to ensure I run my own company responsibly and not turn into the crazy creature my parent company has morphed into. This situation is like a microcosm of global situations where large companies and governments make nonsense, irrational, and cruel decisions in realms of vagueness, blindness, and denial. I like to apply what I learned from Solaria to break those dysfunctional patterns of ill treatment towards people, to create a business that honors and supports people so they can shine and enjoy their work and their lives. I'm hoping this small endeavor will have a positive ripple effect, but I wonder, with the constraints and paradigms of our current reality, is it possible to create a fabulous, well-functioning local business in this mad world? Perhaps this is just a common challenge many conscious leaders face maneuvering in this realm. Yes, it is possible, but you do have to be value-based, and you need to limit what you can do to people of high integrity who appreciate that they're dealing with economic and spiritual warfare. So you need, as a team, to get good at both, and it takes a lot of patience. I was someone coming out of Wall Street that was used to working at very high speed, and I've had to learn to work at very low speed in this kind of environment. Catherine, I've been subscribing for almost a year and have listened to you on various radio shows for a number of years, Coast to Coast, Caravan, etc. My main question is about pensions and how to fight to get what I was promised. I've worked at a union in the printing industry for over 34 years. Back in the early 80s, digital imaging systems were mainly located in pre-press companies and lasted through 1996 when the Mac and Photoshop became viable options. The union remained fairly strong until the 2008 financial depression when companies consolidated or closed. I have seen both the positive and negative aspects of union. Just to express a realistic view of the system, the pension I was promised is now in critical status, possible insolvency. At 60, this changes what my potential retirement would look like. I'm unable to collect anything until 65. What options do I have to collect as much of what I have been promised over the year and counted on in my financial planning? I would need to know a lot more about the specific situation to give you any ideas. The reality is, my guess is if you do, you know, whatever you do, you need leverage, and you're only going to get leverage with audits and transparency and even litigation. So you need to dive in and figure out what happened, what went wrong, and find a way within it to get leverage. And you continue, I'm working to write to my representatives. I believe if the government can bail out the banks, it should protect the people who have produced throughout their working lives. I agree with you. That is certainly is a financial matter. If you can bail out the banks, you can bail out the pensions. The reality is the bailout of the banks was really to refinance out all the securities fraud that was used essentially to steal the equivalent of our pension funds. And my guess is if you look at what got drained out of the back of pension funds in the 2008, you know, that was part of it. So I do believe as a political matter that there was an intentional plan to steal the equivalent of our pensions. So whether or not you can get a bailout, I think it's a very tough road unless you get enough people organized to do it. Due to my reaction to the dot-com bust in 2001-2002, I've not been in the stock market since that time. At this point, with low interest rates, do you have any recommendations on what to do with savings that are earning little interest? Is paying down debt a good way to go? Disintermediation is always good. It shrinks risk. What that means is, yes, paying off debt, I think, is always a good plan. I hate to see money sitting around in the bank earning zero when you could pay off debt that you're paying 2, 3, 4, 5, 6% on. So I almost always like paying debt, but at the same time, I don't know what's best for an individual without knowing your specifics. The other thing, if you listen to the equity overview, I talk about hedged equity, and I think hedged equity is a way to stay invested in the stock market and avoid the big drops. Interestingly enough, at the Wealth Summit, Family Wealth Summit that I was speaking with in California, there were about four speakers, all who proposed hedged equity. So we were all sort of singing from the same page, but we didn't even realize it. They said resending the email from March 15th, still didn't receive any report. What is that? I don't know what that is. If you sent me something about an email on March 15th, could you send it back? I don't know what that is. I know. Somebody's asking for a hard copy of the wrap-up. They said they haven't received it. Hard copies are extra. They don't come automatically. We don't mail them automatically unless you sign up during a promotion, and then we'll send you one for that promotion. We are considering creating a premium subscription where you will automatically get a hard copy, but we won't do that until after we launch the new website. The target date is this summer. Okay, that's it. In closing, I just wanted to remind you, coming up, I will be talking with you on a live teleseminar so you can ask questions. May 25th, that's next Thursday, with Jason Bodensmith. We're going to be talking about protecting against EMF radiation, what 5G means to you. If you haven't listened to the EMF radiation discussion with Jason that we did last year, I would strongly recommend you listen. But now with 5G coming out, I want to discuss 5G, and Jason has a new website and is even more concerned about EMF radiation than he was when we talked to him, so I want to get an update. And then June 1st food series, we have coming up two great interviews from Harry Blazer, one with biodynamic leader Christopher Mann, and another with the Devereaux family from Pasadena, who has the wonderful urban homestead. And so I'm delighted he's going to do those. Anyway, until we talk next week from Sydney, Australia, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.